the Kodesh Kislev, Monday the 8th of November, Rabbi Rashi Simon, Esav and Leah, a match made in heaven.
Kodesh to everyone. It's a pleasure to be here once again, despite the rain and the gloom. But we hope the month holds good things for all of us. This week's Parsha Vayetze narrates the dramatic events surrounding the further career of Yaakov and his efforts to find a bride. And as is well known, Yaakov meets Rachel by the well, and the Torah indicates that he has apparently taken an immediate shine to her, as we would say. And the Torah later on describes how Lavan actually has another daughter as well, in addition to Rachel, who Yaakov has met serendipitously at the well. He also finds that Lavan has, his uncle Lavan has another daughter as well. The pasuk says, "Lavan shtei banos shem agdola Leah b'shem ketana Rachel." The elder is Leah, the younger is Rachel. Ve'enei Leah rakos. The Torah uses this enigmatic description that Leah's eyes are rakos. Rach means soft or tender. V'rachel ha'isei fas toa v'fas mareh. But Rachel, she was a knockout. She was v'fas toa v'fas mareh. Poor Leah here, as we would say in English, is, you could say, subject to, she's been damned with faint praise. The comparison is not a favorable one in respect to her sister Rachel. Rachel is described, as we said, as Yifas Tor v'Yifas Mareh. She's a beautiful form and beautiful of appearance. And the best he can say, that the Torah can say about Leah, she has pretty eyes. V'yahab Yaakov is Rachel. So, surprise, surprise, Yaakov loves Rachel. And therefore he proposes to work 7 years for the hand of Rachel in marriage. The Mefarshim have a few different thoughts about the significance of Leah's eyes. In fact, in another incarnation, this year was called Something in Her Eyes That Shows, with apologies to George Harrison. I'm sure no one here has heard of that, but in case you have. But that was not for the poster, that's just for those who are here. And what is it about Leah's eyes? So, one of the earliest translations of the Torah that we have is that of Rav Sadia Gaon, translating the Torah into Arabic. And it's been translated back into English, it's translated back into Lashon HaKodesh, and in modern times. And Rav Sadia Gaon says, Rakos means Naos Adinos, Naos, beautiful, and Adin. Adin means like beautiful or well-formed. It describes a certain fine and attractive quality. Rashbam says something similar. Rashbam says Rakos means her eyes were beautiful. And he quotes the Gemara in Tanis, Dachavtes, V'kala she'eneha na'os ein kol gufa tzricha badika. Ein kol gufa tzricha badika. That a bride who has beautiful eyes, so that shows that she's a beautiful person. And her beauty doesn't require any further investigation. It's as if the eyes somehow are not only a window to the soul, as we say, but the eyes somehow are an aegis on the rest of her appearance as well. It's interesting, you know, in certain countries, the women customarily are completely covered, and they only have, a slit for their eyes. And I once heard someone say that, you know, even though she's completely covered, you can't see her at all, but you know, sometimes you can tell from the eyes. You know, if she's beautiful, you can just tell by looking at her eyes. And the Gemara actually says that. So Rashbam is sort of struggling to say that when the Torah says that the eyes of Leah were rakos, it means they were beautiful, and because she had beautiful eyes, therefore the rest of her was beautiful as well. Well, that may be so, but the fact is that the Torah says about Rachel, Yifas Torah v'yifas Mareh. So it's still, one has to wonder what the Torah is getting at here in telling us about the eyes of Leah. Radak says something closer maybe to what we would consider the pshat in terms of the contrast to Leah, Radak says, Vene Leah Rakos, Yafas Toar Haisa, she was beautiful, a beautiful appearance, she was of shapely appearance. Elish Eineha Hayu Rakos Vidom Os, but her eyes were tender and prone to crying. So Radak says that what it means is that Leah was completely beautiful. She was also very beautiful, but just her eyes were not quite what they might have been. Her eyes were like her weak point in terms of her pulchritude, which is a good word if you can spell it. Okay, very good. Then, before I get to the one which is best known, which I'd like to examine today with you this morning, I want to tell you about the very sharp comment of Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra was a man of great wit, sometimes a caustic wit. And he says, Rakos, kamashmo, it means what it says it means. Her eyes were tender. And he says, and some people are concerned, they wonder, they marvel, what's the significance of her eyes being tender? He says, Lama hayak yivyeh sholim, lama hayak kein, bavu shechashvu shemachshavos Hashem kemachshavoseihem. Because they think that Hashem sort of thinks in the same way that they think. And people imagine that everybody's supposed to look the same. And therefore, when the Torah says that Leah had a certain quality which was different than other people, so they wonder and they marvel and they seek to understand the significance of it. He says, look, the Torah is just telling us that's how she was. Okay, everybody's different. And it doesn't mean everyone's going to be stamped out of the same mold. Leah was what she was, and her eyes were the way they were. So, okay, Rabbi Nezra doesn't explain why the Torah would mention it. You're right, this is a weakness, lechore, in the approach of Ibn Ezra. But the beauty of his comment is the following. He quotes one of his contemporaries who was a Karaite. Ibn Ezra often spars with the Karaim. And here he says, Uven Ephraim Amar Shehu Chaser Aleph. Ben Ephraim, one of the Karaites, says that the word Arukos is Chaser Aleph. What he means to say is, I'm sorry, the word rakos is chaser aleph, and it should be read as if it was arukos. Her eyes were long, like oval-shaped, like we associate with the Orientals, slanty. That's what her eyes were. That's what Ben Ephraim says. Rakos, it really means with an aleph, arukos. So says Ibn Ezra, v'tamo arukos, that's what he thinks it means. V'hu haya chaser aleph. But Ben Ephraim is chaser aleph. Take away the aleph, he's Ben Parim. Not son of Ephraim, but son of a bull. So this is what Ibn Ezra says about this subject. But of course, the best known comment, and the one which I would like to explore with you this morning, is that of Rashi. It's best known because it comes from Rashi, so everybody knows what Rashi says. Rashi says that Rakos means her eyes were tender, and like Radak says, they were tender because she was crying all the time. Why was she crying? What was she crying about? You know, what's so depressing for her that she's always crying? So again, as we know, Shahaisa Sfura Lalos Begaralo Shel Esav, because she thought she is destined to marry Esav. Why should she think she's marrying him? So Ubochan, therefore she's crying all the time. Shakol Hayu Omrim, everybody was saying, Shnei Banim La Rivka. Rivka has two sons. Ushtei Banos La Lavan, and Lavan has two daughters. So therefore, Hagadol La Gadol, Vakatana La Katan. Therefore, the elder daughter of Lavan is destined to marry the elder son of Rivka. That means she's going to marry Esav. So therefore, she was crying all the time. Azayzak Rashi. The thing is, it's hard to understand why Leah takes the words of the idle rumors or the gossip mongers, you know, maybe the women were playing mahjong or something, you know, because they didn't have other things to do, and therefore they were gossiping about who's going to marry whom, prying into other people's business. And therefore they were saying, you know what, it's a perfect shidduch, we've got a great shidduch in mind. Leah should marry Esav. Yeah, but Esav lives hundreds of miles away. She never met Esav in her life.
She was.
What?
Leah was one of the
Emos. Okay, she became, yeah, I understand. But the point is that before she became one of the Emos, she was apparently, there was talk that she should marry Esav, and therefore she's crying all the time. Why does she take it so seriously? Why doesn't she say, mind your own business, I'll marry who I like to marry. Okay, I've got a cousin in a foreign land, he's called Esav, he's a ruffian, but I'm not interested in him. But apparently, it was serious enough that she was troubled by it. And she was troubled to the point that she thought that her life is, her future is in peril because she's going to end up marrying Esau. Of course, as we know, in the end, she does marry Yaakov through a subterfuge. Yaakov thinks he's marrying Rachel, and he ends up marrying Leah to his consternation, but he stuck with her, so he has to work for 7 more years, and he marries Rachel. Actually, he marries her right away. It's a buy now, pay later plan. It's a layaway plan. Layaway. He's got Leah already, but he's getting Rachel after he takes Rachel after a week, and he has to work for 7 more years for Rachel. He's been deceived. Okay? So what happens? Is there some sense, is there some aspect of Leah which would have made her Taka a good partner for Esau? Is there some sense in which Leah and Esau are actually matched to one another? Is it, as we said in the title here, a match made in heaven? What do you say, Gershon?
Wasn't there a time later that might why they hit Leah from Esau or Rachel?
Okay, very good, that's right. Later on, as we know, later on, after Yaakov marries Leah, and he marries Rachel, and he raises a large family, and finally he makes his way back to Eretz Yisrael, the time has come for him to return, but now he's confronted with the prospect, the specter of the encounter with Esau. And therefore Yaakov prays, and he prepares, and he readies himself in different ways. And the Torah says that he spent a long night, a lonely night, and that was when he wrestled with the assailant. And that same night, he brought his family over a brook, the Yavok. And the Torah there mentions that he took his... I've jumped ahead a bit. He took his 11 children over the brook. And the Torah asks, and Rashi asks, "Dina heichan haisa." We'll get to that in a moment. I've jumped a bit ahead. I haven't jumped ahead. I just in my notes it's the other way around. Okay, we'll talk about this one first. Rashi asks, Chazal asks, "Dina heichan haisa." Why does it say 11 children? You could say, well, the girls don't count. It just means 11 sons, because the girls are not, we're not concerned about them. But Chazal don't take that view. They say, of course Yaakov was concerned about Dina. He was very concerned about her. He was so concerned about her that he concealed her. He concealed her in a chest of some sort. I don't want to say a coffin, but he concealed her in something, and therefore Esau, he said, because Yaakov said that I don't want Esau to cast his eyes upon Dina, who knows what will be. He'll want her, he'll take her, he'll abduct her, and this would be a great tragedy. We'll get back to that in one moment. But before that incident, the Torah describes something else. It's after that incident, but for the purpose of the issue, I want to mention it now. Afterwards, when they finally emerge unscathed from that fateful encounter with Esau, so then Yaakov settles down at Shechem, and he buys a tract of land outside of Shechem, and he thinks, okay, finally his life is now going to be on an even keel. He's returned to his ancestral homeland. He has Baruch Hashem, his family, and he's settling down, and he's escaped this confrontation with Esav. And then the Torah says, "Vateitse Dina bas Leah asher yolda liYaakov viros bivno saaretz." Well, unfortunately, Leah went out for a little soiree. Dina went out for a little soiree, but she's called Dina bas Leah. And Rashi says, "Why does the Torah say Dina bas Leah? Isn't she bas Yaakov?" So the Rashi says, on this, the people say, Ki'ima kivita, as mother, like daughter. Because Dina went out, it says, Liros bivno sa'aretz, she went out to see, and she was seen. And she was abducted by Shechem ben Hamor, and she was assaulted, and she was abused, and it all ends in grief. Especially grief for the people of Shechem as the story unfolds. But the Chachamim wonder, the Chazal asks, what's going on with Dina? Why did she go out? And some are very critical of Dinah, by the way, because it says like mother, like daughter, because Leah also was a little bit too outgoing, because there is on a certain occasion, which again is described in this week's parasha, on a certain occasion, Leah went out to the field to meet Yaakov. And she said to Yaakov that I've got plans for you for tonight. And this is regarded as a little bit unbecoming. Or at least something that is out of the norm, beyond the norm. It reflects the nature of Leah, and it finds its manifestation in Dinah, in the next generation, that Dinah was also a bit too outgoing. And some of the Mepharshim are very critical of Dinah. Rabbeinu Bachaya says that she was went to the hot spots. She went to see the discos, and she went to see the nightlife, and she was dressed in a way that drew attention to herself. As I said, Rabbeinu Bachaya. But all of this is a bit strange. I mean, Leah is one of the Imahos. We invoke the merit of Leah. We bless our daughters many Friday night, Leah Shabbos, that they should be like Leah. I mean, Leah is one of the great matriarchs of our people. And Dinah, we don't know that much about Dinah, and maybe she didn't have such a happy end, but I mean, why is it that Dinah is criticized? I mean, was she so delinquent? I mean, was she, as we say today, off the derech? And I'd like to suggest not at all. On the contrary. Dinah went down Liros Bivnosa Aretz because she thought that she could change them. She thought that she could elevate them. She thought she could be, you know, there's a disco rabbi. Well, maybe she'll be the disco Rebbetzin, you know. And she thought that she could elevate and transform and inspire Benos Haaretz. Why did she think that? Because that was her nature. And that was the nature of Leah. Leah also had that outgoing nature. Leah had the capacity to turn Esav around. Leah really was the right mate for Esav. She could have been the one to bring out the best in Esav. And that's why, in a certain sense, Klape Shemaya, she could have been destined for Esav, but she didn't want that job. And that's why she was crying. And that is why Yaakov wanted to hide Dinah away, because he didn't want Esav to take Dinah. Because Esav would have realized that Dinah, as Leah, would have been a good partner for him. Like it says, "Mi Eilelach," when Esav saw Yaakov and his whole entourage, he said, "Mi Eilelach, who are these for you?" Eile is Osnios Leah. Why did you get Leah? Leah was destined for me. And this is why, when Yaakov hid him away, so as Chazal say in a very sharp comment, Rashi quotes it, "V'dina heichan haisa." So Naal, so it says, "Nasna b'teva." He put her into a chest. "V'naal b'fanea," and he nailed it shut. "Shelo yitein ba Esav einav," so that Esav would not set his eyes upon her. Says Rashi, "Lekach ne'enash," and Yaakov was punished. He was punished because in the end Dinah was abducted, not by Esav, but noch erga, much worse. Shemash, and instead, v'nafla b'yad Shechem, but Yaakov was punished because Shemay tachzirena lemutav, maybe she, Dinah, would have transformed Esav. And you think because of that Yaakov should be punished? What father would not take prudent steps to keep his daughter, his beloved daughter, from the hands or from the eyes even of such a rapacious thug as Esav? So the Bali Musar say, I remember years ago when I was in yeshiva, heard they say b'shem the Alto Slavotka, that it doesn't mean really that Yaakov was punished for hiding her. It just means when he was banging in the nails, he did it with a bit too much satisfaction. He thought, well, now I'm really going to be safe. It doesn't really mean that he was punished for doing it. He did what he had to do. But instead of doing it with a heavy heart, he did it with appreciation. He did it with satisfaction. He was banging in the nails. He was too happy. But I would like to say, b'mechils kvod bale musar, that one doesn't have to go quite that far. It could be in a certain sense, he's taka held accountable. And the reason he's held accountable is that Dinah did have that capacity. That was her nature, to bring out the best in Esav. And with this, finally, we can understand I mean, what I'm saying, by the way, I shouldn't say it's an alternative or it's different than what the Bali Musa say. It's really consistent with it, that Yaakov, in a certain sense, Yaakov was held accountable for hiding Dina away, because it could have been. The Medrash says, Lamas mere'ehu chesed, that Yaakov has withheld chesed from his brother. Yaakov had it within his capacity by allowing Dina to marry Esav, for example. He had the potential to bring out the best in Esav, and Leah could have also brought out the best in Esav, and that would have been a very natural and very compatible shidduch. But Leah didn't want that shidduch, understandably so. But with this we can understand possibly the greatest mystery of the whole scenario, the whole relationship between Yaakov and Esav, and that is, how could it be that Rivka and Yitzchak could produce someone like Esav, someone who was so wicked? And the answer, of course, is that Esav used his Bechira in a way to become a great Pekaro, a great villain, a great antagonist to Yaakov. However, the potential lay within him to become the partner of Yaakov. He could have been the greatest ally of Yaakov. Because Yaakov and Esav, of course, were different. They were opposites. But as the Maharal says, there are two kinds of opposites. There are contradictory opposites, and there are complementary opposites. They were opposite by their nature. If you can say by their genetic predisposition, they were opposites. But yet, Esav could have become the complementary opposite to Yaakov. He could have become the ally to Yaakov. Instead, he became the antagonist of Yaakov. And this is why Leah, by her nature, would have been the comrade, the compatriot and the companion to Esav, because Leah was also outgoing. Leah was also had that quality of being, a person of the world. And Esav, as we know, was Yodeh Tzad Ish Sadeh. He was the street-wise man of the world. Yitzchak thought that Yaakov does not need the blessings of material success, because Yaakov is going to be a spiritual, intellectual person. Esav is the one who needs the blessings of material success. And that's why when Yitzchak thought that he was giving a bracha to Esav, he said to him, V'yitein lecha Elokim mital ha-shamayim u'mishmanei ha-aretz v'rav dagon v'sirosh. If you're going to be a businessman, you're going to be a person of the world, so therefore I'm blessing you with material success, because that's what you need. It was Rivka who realized that Esav is not a reliable partner to Yaakov. It was Rivka who realized that Yaakov is going to have to get by on his own. He cannot rely on Esav to provide for his material needs. Just the opposite. Esav is going to be his mortal foe. Therefore, how can Yaakov survive in this great wide world? He cannot get by just being the 97-pound weakling, being the ivory tower scholar. He can't survive being only the man of the spirit who cultivates the inner life. He can't be Yoshev Ohalim, because he's going to have to contend with the wide world, with Lavan, and well, that's not the worst of it. It's going to get much worse than Lavan as well. Even though it says Lavan Nikesh Lakaras HaKol, but he's going to have to survive. How would he survive? And therefore Rivka conspired to ensure that Yaakov would get the bracha that was originally intended for Esav, so that Yaakov would have his innate nature, his innate quality of being the spiritual, intellectual personality, together with the attributes of Esav. And this is now finally why we can understand how it came about that Yaakov married Rachel, but he also married Leah. If Taka Leah was the right partner for Esav because of her nature, and she could have turned Esav around and brought out the best in Esav, so why did she end up marrying Yaakov? How could Yaakov marry two wives who are so different than one another? Rachel was his natural soulmate. But how could it be that he married Leah as well? The answer is because Yaakov has become like Esav in the positive sense. Yaakov received the bracha that was destined for Esav, so he became like Esav in the sense that he was now able to be a man of the world. he received the bracha that he would be able to prosper and to thrive also as a businessman. And therefore, when he gets to Lavan, he's no longer sort of limited by the Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim quality, but he's become a wheeler-dealer, he becomes very successful, and he even outmaneuvers Lavan repeatedly, to Lavan's great frustration. This is because Yaakov has now acquired, through the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov thinking he was Esav, but Yaakov has now acquired the qualities of Esav as well in the positive sense. And this is the zchus of Leah Imenu, that although it was said that she is destined to marry Esav because she's compatible with Esav, but Yaakov has now become like Esav in the positive sense. And therefore Yaakov marries Leah, and he marries Rachel because he, Yaakov, has become a kind of dual personality. And therefore the two wives reflect the two aspects of Yaakov, one which is essentially innate to him, and the other, the man of the world, the businessman, the one who can succeed and prevail in a great wide world, and sometimes an unsympathetic world, sometimes a hostile and antagonistic world. Yaakov can get by in that world as well, because he has acquired the qualities of Esav, and this is why he was able to marry Rachel and also Leah. And this is the secret of the eyes of Leah, that as we've seen according to Rashi, according to Chazal, the eyes of Leah were not just a reflection of her beauty or maybe a limitation on her beauty like we saw the other Mephoshim want to say al-Derech HaPshat, but it was something much more than that as well. It reflects the fact that Leah recognized that by her nature she may have been destined for Esav, but Zachsa, and she instead married Yaakov, who had acquired those qualities of Esav. And this is why the Jewish people, even Adayom Hazeh, let's say, not in every case, but do we aspire to the ability to cultivate the inner life of the spirit together with a bit of worldly success at the same time? Thank you very much.